Welcome back to the wonderful world of Bakeology. I'm your host, Adam Miller, and I'm joined this week by content creator and the host and creator of the Here We Go web series, Vanessa Calafiore. And together, we're going to explore how food shapes who we are with the No Soggy Bottom Guarantee. You're about to join Vanessa and I as we sit down with a cup of tea and a slab of panettone and have a conversation that left a beautifully profound impact on me. Vanessa's story and outlook on life is really quite inspiring. She's not had an easy life, but it's one that's been filled with the love of her family and close friends, and this is beautifully intertwined with the memories of food and baking that we talk about. But it's not all serious business. There's impassioned debate about croissants, gingerbread houses, and the difference between banana cake and banana bread. There's everybody's favourite bread, focaccia, and even the return of a special music segment from Bakeology Season 1. So settle in. I think you're going to love this one. Vanessa, welcome to Bakeology, and thank you for inviting me to your beautiful kitchen.
Thank you for coming here and experiencing my little humble abode.
No, I love it. I love it. You've chosen some cracking foods and some cracking bakes to talk about today. But before we get into the bakes and the food, I want to start by talking about you. I love a quote from an interview that you did with the ABC where you said, "I'm on a mission to broaden people's definition of disability and not be limited by something you might tell yourself you can't do." And you have embraced what you call the "I got this" mindset, which I love. You're an inspiration to many. So tell me in your words, how did we get where we are today?
Persistence. And love, I would say they're the two main things that let me be here. I was born with no hands and feet for no reason. Everyone always is like, "But why?" And I'm like, sometimes it's okay to not know why, guys. I was raised by a mother who didn't want me to see I had a disability to a point where like I didn't even understand that I had a disability. And then a couple of years into my life, my second mom came along, and then it became a 2-1 punch kind of thing. And the empowerment that they raised me with is, it's, I often say when I was to go through all of my really tumultuous years, when I came back to myself, it was what they gave me that allowed me to come back home to myself. And it was self-belief, self-worth, love, understanding important things in life like community, family, you know, those things. So that's why I'm here today, but a little bit about my life. So I was born without hands and feet. I also live with chronic pain. I've never known a day without pain. That's something that's part of my life. And growing up, I really lived in a world that was polarizing in many ways. I grew up going through a lot of trauma. So that's one thing. But then also I had this really cool place called the Royal Children's Hospital that I was part of. And it was normal to see different kids all around me, from missing limbs to kids with drips to kids with bald heads, just like oddballs, and not in a bad way, in a good way, you know. And some of my friends were people that were like sick and dying. Like, I was actually quite young when someone that I knew died, because I was socializing with kids in the hospital, and that's the reality. It's part of why I think, you know, we are so blessed every day, because I know that there's a kid dying. And not to get too heavy straight off the bat, but like that's why I'm led by love and appreciation. And so that sort of colored my corner of the world. And then when I went into mainstream school and the hospital wasn't so much the main thing, I realized that I was 1 in 18 million. And one of the things that my mom said to me growing up was, "You may be different on the outside, but we're all the same on the inside." Yeah. And so that alone colors the way I was raised by these women. And so I went about my business, achieving things. I had an interest in music and went down that road. And then I got sick with chronic pain, which now I know I was walking on a broken leg.
Oh, wow.
So this is sort of the level of chronic pain that I live with. But in that time, I started a YouTube channel. I was like, I'm not going to do nothing, because I'm a very productive girl. Also, just don't know how to sit still.
No, I'm much the same. Yes.
Right. And so then that led me to do YouTube. And from YouTube, I sort of got into makeup artistry. And I suppose that's where an "I got this" mindset was somewhat birthed.
Yeah.
Not consciously. I definitely had a video up where I said, if I can, you can. And I was inspired by this makeup artist at the time, Candy Johnson. She had interviewed someone with a missing limb. And I was like, oh my goodness, I feel seen. I'm going to do YouTube.
Yeah.
And
so your YouTube started out as makeup tutorials.
Yeah. Yep. Makeup tutorials and just lifestyle stuff. And actually I was like Australia's 67 in the world. No. How do I say this? At one point I was 67 in Australia, right? Top
people. On like the YouTube charts.
But that's not cool because back then that's how uncool YouTube was. So like it wasn't hard to do. But I still have the screenshots, right? If I find it, I'll send it to you.
No, do.
But so I've always just been in and around social media and it's been the access point that I've come back home to from doing different varying things. And I went off and I would go on and off doing YouTube across the years and it had evolved over time. I did a thing called Nessie Vlogs, which was a year in my life. I posted a video every single day for a year. When I put something on a list, I achieve it. When I was really little, I'm sort of jumping around here, but people started saying to me, oh, you know, you might not be able to do this. You might not be able to do that. I'm like, what the f***? Can I swear?
Swearing is permitted.
Okay. Sorry, Mom. They're not going to like that. It is what it is, guys. Yeah, I haven't been up there. For how well they raised me, they've not been able to like stamp that out. And so basically I was like, what do you mean? And so I was like, well, if I can, I will. And so I can. What I say I can kind of thing, right? Chicken and egg, you know? And so I put things on a list because I was like, well, I may not be able to do it right now, but I will not stop until I do this. Like, think about it. I'm a kid in a mainstream school learning how to write. So you close your eyes right now and you tell me what did learning to write look like? You looked at the teacher writing on the whiteboard or the blackboard. You look to your left, you look to your right. There's people with hands, right? In my reality, I had to believe that I could write. There was nothing showing me that I could do it. There was only me telling me as well as my support system. That's why I say community is so important. Yeah. I think that the most empowered disabled people are ones that are allowed to be independent with a community. And I never used to really lean into that, but that's something that, you know, everyone has their own journey with. And so, so I like put things on a list and seeing myself be able to do things over time that no one else was doing because I'm one in 18 million, literally. So, so I was just like, okay, well, I can do this and then I can do that. And then that build and build and build. So come to then a challenge of 365 days posting every single day.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to fail. There was no option for not doing that challenge. But through that, my mum was, I'll just sort of name them because I got two mums. Very confusing. So Raf and Sonia.
Yep.
My mum, Raf, she and I started baking together and she got dubbed Baking Mum.
Yep. So this was on YouTube.
This was on YouTube, right?
It's part of the 365.
Part of Nessie Vlogs, which none of this is like, because I can't access my account. So sad.
Oh, it's gone.
Yeah. Because they did this thing, like they did like an update or something. I don't know, whatever. But it's like, you can't access unless you have your password. There's nowhere to even reach out. If anyone knows, please help a sister out.
Yeah, YouTube help desk, please.
Yeah. Mum and I did some baking together and she went off and like fully found love with it and completely threw herself into it. And I sort of realized like I have a knack for creating things and I love that sort of aspect of, and then it sort of started expanding.
Yeah.
So I did a little bit of that. And then, so I did YouTube and then I moved out of home and I went on a hiatus because I was like, I wasn't fish out of water.
Yeah.
I'm a wog. Okay. First of all, we don't move out of home unless we have a ring on our finger. So that was why I was the exception because I don't have no fingers. And I was like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. But like, that's just what is expected. Yep. You know, or that you're moving out with the person you're going to marry and have babies, right? So I was a rebel. But I have lesbian parents, so they're already being rebels. That's right. What it is, whatever.
Yeah, they set the
Not
bar.
That it's exciting anymore.
How common.
But in the 90s, you know, I was raised in the 90s and we were stared at. It was not the way it is now. So I move out of home and I am a gym fit chick, you know, whatever, eating disorder. So like exercising is like number one for me. So I join a gym. So my mate recommended Doherty's. I was like, all right, I'll check it out. Well, I'm a tattooed chick. At the time, I really only wore black.
Yep.
And so, and there were bikies next door.
So you fit in.
So I fit in.
Yeah.
And
there's that community again.
Yeah, that community. But then what I would like to draw your attention to, which you bang on about, is that that place, especially the time that that little tiny decision that I made became such a turning point for me. But it's something that made me realize the power of community. It's full of crazy people in there. And what was my first and most familiar experience as a child? The Royal Children's Hospital, which was also a weird, oddball collective of people. So I felt home because it felt, looking back, I'm connecting dots. Back then, I'm like, I don't know. You know, I'm in my own crap trying to figure out life, you know. So now I've moved out of home for like a little bit of time. I'm in Doherty's and now I'm in the bodybuilding community and someone suggests do bodybuilding.
Do a comp.
So I did that. I jumped on stage twice. I'll sort of cut through all of that. You know, everyone can sort of Google Vanessa in your hands. It comes up. And and that's, I suppose, what led me to really have a platform to facilitate. And I got this mindset. You have to play the hand you're dealt in life, you know, and do it to the best of your ability. And just because you've got a poor hand doesn't mean that you're not going to be on the up the next round. You know, we don't only have one hand in this lifetime. So I took some time off. I'm like, well, what do I do? Do I do this book? Do I do this?
Yeah.
And I just began like fucking around in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I had this thing called Being Vanessa at the time as well. I had teased maybe doing another comp, but I was so lost. I didn't know, you know, so much transition was happening for me. And in amongst all of that, the kitchen stuff really took off and felt really fulfilling because it was showing people that like you can laugh at a disabled person but with a disabled person as well as relate to the disabled person. Now I don't know about you, but like not everyone has no hands and feet, yet to feel togetherness, we're crossing the bridge together and we're on the other side together. There isn't me over here on a pedestal. There isn't me in my sadness. There is us as a collective, as a community, doing the best that we can, you know, with the hand that we're dealt. And that is where I was like, wow. So just because I believe in myself, I'm going to figure out how to make this a mindset for everyone. And I developed what is now called Here We Go, My Show.
Yes.
And that leads me to where I am today.
And here we are now. So so food was one of the sort of the big connectors, I guess, wasn't it? Connecting you with a bigger audience, with sort of breaking down that potentially the stigma that's associated with being disabled or the myths and the misunderstandings. So your first season was about food, and that's how I came across your work. You've done episodes on so many topics, including roast potatoes, steak, rolling sushi, making gnocchi with your mum, flipping tortilla, which I watched this morning, which was fantastic. What were some of your favorite episodes of that season?
I like my babies. I don't know.
What did you enjoy most about making them? Okay,
because I enjoyed the freedom of being entertainer and comedic.
Yep.
My background is in music, so I love performing and I'm very performative as a human being. I lean into my difference and my weirdness as a personality trait, not as like because I'm disabled, I identify as that, right? It's just I give myself permission to be who I am to the full degree and I believe so in leading the example on that, right? Walk the walk you talk. There should be no difference. People go, wow, I meet you in person. It's like you're literally the way you are online. It's not like smokes and mirrors. And I'm like, well, so
that was a similar thing that I learned on the show as well with Bake Off. Like when it started, I felt like I had a bit of a, maybe the shields were up a bit and I would approach what I was doing, what I was baking with an air of I'm doing this to impress and I'm going to be on TV. So I need to present a version of myself. And then it wasn't until maybe episode 3 or 4 where I'm like, no, like this doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah.
And it was when I started being more myself, like I was starting to paint my nails. I was just being a little bit more of a dickhead that I often am. And that's when I started doing well. And that's when, I think I started to shine more.
Do you feel like it relieved pressure?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I could just, yeah, like going through life as well, a gay kid in the country.
Yeah.
There's often that, like you carry around that facade, I guess, where you never quite sure where you can be yourself. And doing the show really helped me sort of break that down and be like, I can be myself and I'll be celebrated for it. And going on to Bake Off, where you're the center of it, everyone's there to sort of celebrate what you enjoy doing and who you are, is quite an empowering experience.
That really like emotionally touches me. Thanks for sharing that. I think that's so cool that you were able to like live fuller and bigger. And has that impacted like your life now? Is that just like in everyday life since doing the show, have you been able to just...
Yes. Like I reflected towards the end, like when the show finished and after I'd gotten over the high of being on, like, you know, you have the dip after you're doing something exciting and then it takes a little while to turn that around. But reflecting on it, it was the first or one of the first times that I could, like, I felt a sense of pride that I hadn't felt before. And there was a level of confidence that I could bring to other aspects of my life, whether that be it sort of doing the podcast, doing other bits of content at work or just in general personal life. I felt safer just being myself, I think. And it just brought more of me out across the board, which I think is a really lovely thing.
Life should be fun.
It should be fun.
Like, and why are we so serious? Why so serious?
I know. Thanks, Joker. Such a good quote. And that fun and that joy, I think, really comes across in particularly in the series. I've watched most of the episodes. One that I found slightly triggering was the gingerbread house episode.
Oh,
regular listeners,
Adam, what was your trauma? Talk to me.
Well,
let's unpack it.
I like the idea of them. I enjoy gingerbread, but I hate constructing a gingerbread house. There's so much effort that goes into it, and inevitably, when I've done it, it looks like crap. So why not just have a gingerbread biscuit? I wanted to know.
A ginger snap even.
Yeah. Just I love ginger. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love ginger. Mm-hmm. Anything with ginger in it, give it to me right now.
Mm.
How do you feel about gingerbread houses after that episode?
I never want to see a gingerbread house in my house ever again. Ever. It doesn't cross the threshold. Absolutely not. No way, Jose. No. To explain to the listeners, I had a gingerbread house. I was so good for so long of it to the point that I was cocky with my competitor and I was like, hee hee hee. And then everything went fucked up in the last 30 minutes.
It sort of slid off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I had no glue, I had paste. And so I had to pivot. But again, so this is what exemplifies that I got this mindset. So everyone was like, oh, well, you know, it's okay, try again or whatever. But I was like, no, I've got this. And so I turned a gingerbread house into a rooftop bar.
A rooftop bar. I loved it. So you took one of the roof pieces just to paint the picture because the roofs slid off like an avalanche.
Yes.
It was.
It was terrible.
It was terrible. No one was hurt in the process.
No.
But you took a piece of the roof and laid it flat across the walls. And so you had the triangles on the side and the roof at the top.
And so then I put, when I did that, I really did do it. You know, I put a bar, like a table thing there, and then the gingerbread man ended up on top of the...
Yeah, they were having a great time.
And it was great. Like the selfies that the internet didn't see, literally so hilarious. They're my favorite part. Actually, so you did ask that would have been one of my favorite moments because ultimately we wouldn't have those like selfie things if it weren't for that moment. So here's the thing, and I'd love your opinion and advice on this.
Oh.
So you know how I said I'm a rebel?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't like following recipes, it appears. So the problem is that I like to do my own thing. I also don't like measuring things. I don't think things should be exact. One arm's longer than the other, right? Like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But baking
is
very precise.
Look, baking can be very precise.
Is it though? Because everything when I don't measure it is failed. So are you just very talented and skilled and you are who you are and that's why you're like, meh?
No, look.
Okay, talk
look,
to
if,
me.
Look, if you, the recipes give you measurements for a reason.
Okay.
So if you're trying to make, I don't know, if Nigella's written a recipe and you're making her cake, what she's put there will get you as close as possible to what she made.
Okay.
But I think sometimes I think that precision, the baking can feel your fear that you're like, oh, I've got to get this just right,
yep,
or this isn't going to work. More often than not, if you don't have scales and you're using cups, or you're just throwing stuff in and there's a little bit of extra sugar, there's a little bit of extra flour, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
You generally come up with something that is still delicious and edible. It might not be what the person wanted or what the recipe was.
Okay.
But as long as you can eat it and enjoy it, I don't think it really matters if it's different, right? Sometimes there's baking fails. I've had baking fails. That's fine. That's how you learn. But I don't think...
Did you see how melted the bomb Alaska was? I'm sorry, but I'm not understanding what you're saying in terms of this context, because it was flat and we had to eat it off the... We scooped it. I scooped it up with my arms and placed it back into the bowl.
How did it taste?
Oh, well, yeah, okay, I see your point. Aha, burn. Burn. Yeah, okay, guys. Yeah, he's right in that way. But the other thing too is... I would love to take the opportunity as I sit here with you to have a question answered, right? Why does butter melt out of cookies if you put too much or too little in? Like, what's actually happening there? Because that seems to be the thing for me when everything goes pear-shaped.
Yeah, the like, butter melts out.
But like butter's literally, and I'm like, but I mixed it real good. I sent pictures to my mom and she's just like... What did you do? And I'm like, I don't know.
So are we talking biscuits specifically?
Yeah, choc chip cookies, right?
Like, yes.
It melted out like now.
And you followed the recipe. So the
No.
So perhaps there was too much butter.
Yeah.
But did you chill it before you baked it?
Ish. Well, because sometimes it sits on the counter and I get distracted and I'll I'm making cookies, and then I'll go off and I'll start work and then I'll be like, oh, I was making cookies. So then I'll go back to the, you know.
So I think... I'm just guessing.
Okay.
I don't know the specifics of the butter, of the way butter works and the physics of it. But I would say there's probably too much.
Yeah.
Or the biscuits weren't chilled enough.
Right.
So once if you're doing chocolate chip cookies, you roll them obviously into balls. Then I put mine in the freezer for 15, 20 minutes or in the fridge for half an hour to an hour. And then you bake them, they don't spread as much, and then stuff doesn't
ooze. Okay.
That would be my guess.
I'm going to send you a picture if this ever happens again.
Yes, do.
Be like, help. But also, I feel like now that I know you, I'm like, oh my goodness, Adam, uh-oh. You know, because there's been some real doozies on the show, that's for sure. But yeah, I don't know. Okay, cool. I'll try that. The butter... And freezing. My mom does that too. She also gives me cookies so that I can have like one choc chip cookie at a time.
Yes, that's a great way to do it. Oh, I often make a batch. And this is the other thing. The other good thing, particularly with chocolate chip cookies, do the cookie dough and then make a couple just so you can hit that sort of cookie craving that you've got. But then put the dough in the fridge, like in its bowl, and just leave it for 2 to 3 days and then roll them. And then either freeze them for later or bake them then. And the flavor is so much better. They don't spread as much. They cook better. That takes cookies from here to here.
Can I roll them all and then leave them in the fridge?
I've never tried that, but I would assume it would do the same thing.
Okay. I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
I will keep this. I will keep you posted on this. Yeah. I'll give you an update.
Yes, I've seen someone do it online, which is where I got the idea.
My world.
So, and then I did it myself, and I baked some on the day, some the second day, some the day after, and then the second day.
So I'm gonna wait 3 days because I want them to be fabulous. Or is that too long?
No, three days at most.
Okay, at most two.
Two.
Okay,
two is fine.
I'm gonna do this because my favorite thing in the whole world is a choc chip cookie. Mm. So if I can like level up my choc chip cookie, I wish I could make a choc chip cookie taste like this. That would be epic. That would be where I'm very happy. But I don't want choc chip in that.
No.
I want that to be in the... I'm a very complicated woman.
Also add salt. Salt always. Pinch of salt.
Yeah. So I do that on top.
On top and in.
And coffee. My mum says...
Yeah, coffee brings out the chocolate.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, mum. I blind faith listen to them. I'm like, cool.
Yeah, they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They're wogs.
Yes.
Am I allowed to say that word?
Yes, you are. I give you permission.
Excellent.
I dub thee. Yeah, there we go. My
partner Nick's Italian, so I feel like it's okay.
Oh, no. Well, that's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. You pointed to this, and this is... you're referring to the first bake that we're going to talk about today. We're going seasonal and we're going festive, and we're talking about the panettone.
Yes.
Why have you selected this delicious festive Italian bread as the first bake?
Because I just really love it. And when you asked, the literal first thing that came to my mind above a choc chip cookie is this, because this to me exemplifies what I can't have in baking, if that makes sense. Like, I wish this could be something that was made for me, right? Like, so I'm like, okay, I want this. And I have asked my mother for a panettone or a pandoro, because there's all the, so a panettone is one that has fruit in it. A pandoro is just basically sans anything. It's just a plain sweet bread with icing sugar. Honestly, it's just what first came to mind, and that is why I chose it. I just really love it. There's something comforting to it, is what I would say that I love about it.
I love a panettone, and I love how long they last. So I brought one today.
Thank you so much.
No, it's my pleasure. If you hear us chewing, that's what we're eating. We got this at Christmas, and so it's been just sitting in the cupboard, just waiting for this moment.
Oh, that's so sad. Would never have lasted that long in my
house. I know. So I feel like sometimes the panettone is a forgotten Christmas gift.
No, not in other people's houses. I know, because there's like that like funny joke where the panettone goes
just gets
around.
Handed around.
Yes, which is true, because I have received one with some names under it before. I can confirm this is definitely not bullshit. It's a real thing. Zia, you know who you are.
Name and shame.
Yeah, so
I researched the panettone for this.
Okay,
Learned some interesting facts.
Ooh.
Panettone means big bread in Italian. Okay. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
I want to say something so different right now. But I'm a lady. You shan't know. That's a private thought.
Traditionally contains raisins, candied orange, and citrus zest, which I think this one does. It's sweet and delicious. In the notes that you sent through, you mentioned that you don't want a colomba. And so this is a similar bread shaped like a dove, and colomba translated means dove, hence the name. Doesn't have the raisins in it. Can be studded with candied orange peel, often topped with pearl sugar and almonds. So subtly different. And I think the dough itself is a little bit different.
Yes, that's my gripe with it. Because I actually prefer the shape. Growing up, I was more into a pandoro over a panettone. So I was like, oh, this makes sense to like this one more. But it's like drier or denser. And there's just something about it that I'm just like, no. And I'm not in it. I'm not about it. And it just like, it irritates me. It's the try hard panettone. Sorry. I'm just like, why try so hard? Just bring out the panettone. Just like, let it have a resurgence. Like, also my gripe is like, so there's this funny thing that I do every year where Boxing Day, I go to a Coles or a Safeway. Okay. I'm a Melbournean, so we say Safeway.
We do say Safeway.
Right.
Not Woolies.
And we go down, sure enough, hot cross buns. So why can't we at Easter time? They're making the colomba anyway. Why can't they make the...
That's a great question.
Exactly. So I want to know who the authorities are. I want these people to be held
just
to court.
Just extend the panettone season.
Yeah.
They come out quite early though, don't they? Like before Christmas.
Well, it's starting to be earlier now, right? But they're like, as a child, you really had to wait for these things to come to the specialty stores that had them.
Yes.
Now we have them in our supermarkets because multiculturalism, amazing, great. But I remember, you know, you would have to fight. The reason why the traveling panettone happens is also too. So it's like, well, that's the one we got, mate. You know, and it's because there's a classing system, right? That no one is the same, you know, and not necessarily more money on a panettone will make it better.
Oh, no.
No, I think that it's about the labor of love. And you can taste it.
You can taste it.
I'm very passionate, guys.
No, I love the passion about the panettone. But do you think if it was available all year round, it would lose some of the specialness? Is it the fact that it is only around for a limited time every year and it's something that you look forward to? Do you think that dials up the enjoyment a little bit?
I have a counter argument.
Tell me.
You order a cake and a wedding cake and you have access to all sorts of things like that 24/7, 365 days. Why can't we have access to panettone? I feel like the limited access is an unfair.
Yeah,
you know,
I get it.
Like, those that won't get sick of it won't, and those that will, it's not for. Not everything is for everyone. And I don't think it makes it any less special, no, because I'm someone that genuinely loves it. But I do agree that it becomes less of a novelty for those that it becomes this special thing. Because for me, hot cross buns are that. Like, I don't understand why the hot cross bun thing has become a thing, because do people know that you can just get a hot bun?
Yes,
you don't without need the cross.
The cross doesn't make it taste better.
But it's the same thing.
It is the same thing. On hot cross buns, we've celebrated Easter early this year.
Oh, okay. And happy, Happy Easter.
Because this will go out after Easter.
Okay.
And we're positively flooded with hot cross bun varieties.
Yes.
Pizza shape, Vegemite. Yes. I think I saw a Biscoff, caramel.
What?
Yep.
I have not seen these. Where?
Safeway. Woolies. Oh. Coles. Are you a hot cross bun traditionalist? Or are you here for the variations?
I'll try a variation because I have this thing in me where I have FOMO. It runs deep to the point where I went through a really long period of time where I didn't like yogurt, and I went on a journey to try all these yogurts and then brainwashed myself into liking yogurt. And now I go and love yogurt. Like, I just love yogurt, right? I even made yogurt myself, right? Mm. That's how much I've like evolved over it. Yeah. So I have this real need to try everything. So if I know something's existing, I will most likely just by a proxy of, well, what does it taste like? Then I'll want to taste it.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I'll try it because of
the novelty value of it.
Yeah, but if you're asking me what my favorite hot cross bun is, then also no two hot cross bun that's a traditional one is the same either. We live in Melbourne.
That's true.
So we're very, very, very blessed to have amazing bakeries.
Mm.
What about things like croffin?
Yes. Like a croissant, croissant muffin.
Oh, you say croissant, so lovely. Croissant.
I used to say croissant would be my country pronunciation of it growing up in regional Victoria.
Gotcha.
But from Melbourne now.
Yeah. You've crossed the yarda, darling. It's basically a squished croissant in my opinion.
It is.
Because where does the muffin texture come into it? It doesn't.
It's because it's cooked in a muffin tin.
Yeah, but let's do better in developing the recipe, guys.
Or the name.
Let's add a muffin like component. Let's make it a little. My thing is too, so okay, I fully threw myself under the bus here. I didn't have my own hand. So I have this thing with croissants. I actually don't like them. But if I go to a bakery, I order them.
Mm.
And I used to have a favorite croissant. And I'm going to say it very weird now each time I'm going with this. So I used to have a favorite one. And then that changed. And now I'm trying to match the nostalgia of that specific one, and nothing compares to it, right? It just literally doesn't exist anymore. And so I've just really lost my love for them. And there's one place, I forget what it's called. That's been the first time where I was like, I'm genuinely excited about this one.
Are you talking a classic plain?
I think,
or an almond?
So here's my gripe with, I'm going to maybe be controversial.
No, here. I feel like I'm going to agree, but continue.
I don't know.
Mm?
It's trying to be flaky and buttery. They're opposite things for me. I get it for you, but not for me.
Yeah, you're really pulling apart the French classic, aren't you?
I'm sorry. Like, look, I'll do an almond croissant.
Mm.
You know, amazing.
Almond croissant is my preferred.
Yes,
I often find plain croissant quite dry.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I just haven't had the best ones yet. I can get around the flaky and the buttery.
Okay.
Because it's just butter in a different form, I guess. Okay. The flakes are there because of the butter. So without the butter, there'd be no flakes.
Yeah.
And if you get a good one, which is rare for me, like the middle, it has that taste of butter.
So I understand that, and that's okay. But also it's the outside that it's just like, it's like to get to the middle though, and it's never there. Like, that's the problem. Like, you open it, you wait, and it's just like, what the hell, man? Like, what the hell? And it's so disappointing, which is what the almond croissant cuts that shit out. Cause it's like, well, I've cut you in half and I've tried to level you up. You know, I've given you a surprise.
I've toasted you.
Yeah, exactly. It's been treated really well.
It has. It's had a glow up. Well, we're moving on to bread now.
Okay.
Your mum's focaccia, to be exact.
Yeah.
Now, is this Raf's or Sonia's recipe?
So Sonia is, that's the next one. This is Raffy's. Mm-hmm. Raffy, she hasn't been making this for very long. Mm. It's just, I'm all about, did this rock my world, you know? And this freaking thing, she kept saying, it's amazing, it's amazing. I'm like, oh, whatever. And I think it was something she developed like over lockdown.
The focaccia recipe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think she took it from somewhere and then she's Raffi does her own thing to something, right? She is...
She makes it her own.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So she adds pizzazz and flair and whatnot, you know, becomes all herself. And so in doing that, she's like, oh, it's amazing. But so here's the thing with my mum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Raffi. I know she's listening.
Hi, Raffi.
She'll love that. You would have seen it in the episode. She was the one that made the most appearances in season one mm-hmm. because literally she's just like, you can't see me. And I'm like...
I like the bit where she was I think it was the tortilla episode.
With my other mum.
She's standing in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And then comes around the back and tries to duck behind. Yeah. It's very stealthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very stealthy.
Very don't be a spy, mum. I could be a spy, I reckon. But anyways.
Add it to
the
list.
Could you be a spy?
Me?
Do you reckon you'd get away with being a spy?
No.
No? Why?
No. Not very good liar.
Oh, okay.
Well, it depends. Like, a spy is probably more unseen than an undercover. Yeah. I was thinking undercover. I still don't think I'd be very good.
Interesting.
I'm not very discreet sometimes.
Ooh, I didn't factor that in. Yeah, true. But
yes, the bread.
Yeah, the
your mum's making bread, a difference.
So my mum's making. Thank you. See, I told you, rabbit holes.
That's right.
So, which I think that's why I would make you a good spy, because my thing, just to go back very quickly to the spy thing.
Oh, I love it.
Right, I feel like you'd be a good spy because I think when you're a good interviewer, you climatize to that person that you're sitting across from, and you actually see them, and so you somewhat take a step back. So you really are a little bit like undercover.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. So you think...
If you think of it from that perspective...
Because they can draw things out.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, so my mum... Gosh, my mum's making this for gotcha, right?
Yes.
Over lockdowns. And the thing about my mum is that she doesn't make something the same thing twice.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows this. So we tend to not tell her something's amazing because then she'll probably think that the version isn't right yet. And she'll stick closer to that. Mm. And has a fighting chance of being the same, right?
Mm-hmm. What makes it so good?
The mouthfeel is what I would say. Like when you're biting into it, it's just like there is for gotcha. It can work as just like a plain thing by itself, but it also works like I'm really into mortadella at the moment.
Mm. So it's having like, a moment.
It mortadella. Is, which really is crazy good for me because like it makes it easier to like find in the more fancy places I like to frequent because it's like rather than, you know, trying to find one supplier, I now have two suppliers that are, you know. And so, yeah, so that's sort of like why I like it. It's very multifaceted.
Mm.
But then she made it a second time, Adam.
And?
It was sensational.
Oh, better.
And then she made it another time. Sensational.
What's her secret?
Well, no, but just let's go back to the fact that she doesn't make things consistently.
Yeah.
So that's why it's my favorite because I'm just like, okay, so you've hooked into this.
So she just keeps changing it, but just... I don't recreates know what it is. Magic that's...
She'd probably give you the recipe and be like, well, this is all that I do. And she'd be very excited. I don't know. I just know that as a consumer of her products.
As a focaccia consumer.
As a focaccia consumer, which they're having a moment as well. So yeah, they are. So like, you know,
focaccia and mortadella, you've chose two very trendy foods to talk about
annoying.
There. Does she put anything on the top? Or is this?
She does like the finger thing.
The dimples.
The dimples.
Mm-hmm.
And so does my nonna. So my nonna has like a, culturally, just to sort of go there, their differences. So my mum, I believe, doesn't use any potato. Whereas my grandmother, my nonna, she uses potato as a base as part of like the softening of the dough to make it more softer.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it as like this big, very fluffy focaccia with that essence of a gnocchi in it.
It's two carbs together at last. I'm gonna take a sip.
Yeah.
How is it? How is the focaccia going? Oh, that's not a focaccia.
That's
a panettone. Oh
my God, imagine focaccia panettone. Mom,
I tried to make a sweet focaccia.
Really? What was it? What was it?
It needed work. It was okay. It had a pear and hazelnut in it. I feel like it was made for a cheese board. Like, I feel like it would go really well with a spread of cheese, some sort of quince paste or similar. It sits in the back of my mind as one day of something that I need to come back to. But does the world need a sweet focaccia? I don't know.
Well, it's like, why not just, you know, if you really want to do something, just do it.
It's true. I still can't get around piece of shape hot cross buns, though.
I believe
they sell out really quickly.
Oh.
Put limited edition on something.
Yeah.
And then people flock.
They're not making panettone every day. Because think about it. If panettones were an everyday thing.
It loses the specialness. Yeah. And back in my research for panettone, it started out as a Christmas thing, because the ingredients that we used to make it were so rare at the time. It originated, I believe, if what I read is correct, in northern Italy.
Okay.
Made with wheat flour, which was really rare at the time, and the raisins, the citrus, the lemon and the orange came from southern Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So rare foods to be up in the northern regions of Italy. So
travel?
So, yes. Mm-hmm. So we're talking like hundreds of years ago. And so it was used as a celebration thing at Christmas because the ingredients were so expensive, so rare. That's why it was such a special thing to have. Like, you'd present this and you'd be like, wow, where'd you get these ingredients from? This is so amazing. And perhaps...
And costs as well.
So perhaps that's some of the historic tradition is why.
Well, now you've made me connected to liking it being a special thing.
Mm.
Maybe I have a little less hate for it not being an all-the-time thing now. Well, no, because, like, as you say that, you know, I'm feeling connected to my cultural background, you know, and my grandparents like lived in Italy and they migrated here. So my grandmother talks a lot about, she comes from humble beginnings and she also didn't have a lot. She's one of seven and things like that you were saying, like that was her reality as well. I hadn't really connected. I'm just living in my, you know, developed country going, well, I want my panettone every day.
Where's my panettone?
Yeah. Whereas the reality is very insightful.
There you go, food for thought.
Yeah. Wow. I actually think you fully humbled me. Like I genuinely mean
that was
this.
Not the
this
intention.
Is, but... No, in a really, I'm in a positive way, but this is the thing. You should be open-minded to the whispers of the universe, right? The universe tries to tell us messages every single day. And if you let it pass by, it's on going bock you on the head. And I don't want that. I want no damage to my physical being. I want to vibrate high always. So I feel like, yeah, that's actually.
And I do feel like a way around your conundrum, just to buy up 5 or 6 panettone at Christmas time.
I could try that and then like maybe leave them at people's houses that don't like panettone, and then that way they're not at liberty of being eaten.
Yeah, I guess that's the danger. Yeah. If you've got 6, you're going
to
eat 6.
Yes, yes. I have no willpower when it comes to panettone. Like I really need you to understand that. Like really, you know, the only reason why there's still some on my plate is because I'm gas bagging.
Yeah, because we're talking.
Yeah.
I feel bad keeping you away from it.
No, it's right. I'm going in, guys.
Going for another bite. So good. I've finished mine. I just dove straight in. Let's move on to your mum's banana cake now. This is Sonia's, I believe. Is this Sonia's banana cake? Tell me why you love it.
So where do I even begin with this story? So one of my mums, right? There's an age gap between, oh gosh, I hope they're okay with this. There's an age gap, right? So one of them is, you know, there's 10 years apart. So when the second mum came in, we called her our spare mum originally, you know, because not everything happens overnight. You know, they're really healthy and like they let us evolve and develop that relationship. And so that one, the Sonia one, learnt how to cook basically. We all learnt with each other. And one of the things that she learnt to make that my grandmother taught her was to make banana cake.
Yes.
And only Sonia in our household makes this. Rafi doesn't go near the banana cake because it's just not the same. She doesn't know how to make the same thing twice. Yeah, I don't know what she's doing with it.
Like, so Sonia follows the recipe.
Oh, to a T. She's like, that doesn't belong in there. Don't do that. You know, that's not the order. Like watching, sometimes I think, her watching my content stresses her out.
She looked a bit stressed in the episode you did together.
Yeah. But she's chill. She'll go with my flow. She did. She's very like stoic.
And the end result
that.
Was...
Yeah. She was so proud of me. I cannot believe to this day that she let me flip a tortilla. Like bonkers. But yeah, so she made the banana cake. Well, not banana bread. And there's a difference here, okay? Because texturally, I feel there's a difference. Also, in my household, we would make it in this circle, like, cake tin that only a banana cake would be made in.
Yes.
And so for us, that was one of the earliest memories of connecting with my mom.
Yes.
And I am privileged enough to say I got to fall in love with my mom because she came along when I existed already. And she never ever put any pressure on us to feel anything other than safe and supported and loved, and if we reciprocated that love and it grew into something, yeah, that it did, you know, not the
beautiful.
Oh, mate, I was, wow, so, I got the lottery with my two mums. Yeah. I really did. And so, yeah, so it was one of my earliest. I've not actually thought about it like that before. Hmm. I might get emotional.
That's why I love doing this, because this always, this sort of, yeah, stuff always comes up. It's so nice.
I have the best feeling right now.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, I'm sitting on the bench top. It was, we sort of had a very small, small, tiny house. And there was this, like, bench top in the kitchen. And I had my legs off. I'm really little with my legs off. I'm, mm-hmm, like, normal size now, but when I was little, obviously I was tiny. Mm. And I was sitting on the bench and we're making banana cake and my brother's there, and it just felt so easy and effortless and not scary to be in the world. And that comfort from, mm, baking is what that's always offered me, that real, mm, sense of connection to this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to make. And so even though you're making banana cake and, yeah, it tastes delicious, I think it's become a thing because it's what we did with her, and it's what,
yeah,
I want from my mom. If something's, shit's going down, I want Sonia to make me banana cake and I probably want my mom to make me brodo. Mm. So they're the two things that I would be like, meh, you know?
It, yeah, takes you back to those, that time where, yeah, you feel safe, or
of course
takes you back to that beautiful feeling that you're so eloquently describing. And that's why I love baking.
Yeah. It's, I hadn't realized that that's how I feel.
Hmm. Glad we could uncover that.
Yeah.
That's really nice. I
can't wait to tell them that, actually.
Yeah.
Can't wait for them to hear that.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
You mentioned, I mean, this is a complete topic, okay, or shift, but the differences between banana cake and banana, yeah, bread.
Yep.
You touched on it before.
Yes.
You've got strong feelings about this.
I do. I have strong feelings about everything. Yeah,
it's good. It's good. And I think we agree on the difference.
Yeah, well, because one's a cake and one's a bread. It's the density, I think. It's
and the, like, shape.
The shape as well. I also don't want walnuts in my, like, you know, people go and put nuts and chocolate chips and all sorts of weird things. But really, it's just the loaf pan would be the main
difference. The defining, yeah. And I think it needs to be able to be put in a toaster and not fall apart.
Yeah.
Because I like mine toasted.
Yeah.
And so a cake, gotcha, would just...
At least Sonia's, like, would for sure do, got a crumb.
To tender, yeah, tender, yep, crumb, yep, yep, that just, yep, sort of disintegrates when, doing, you put the...
She has witchcraft, guys.
Oh, it's so, I mean, I've not tasted her cake, so I can't compare, so I won't. But yep. Nick's mum made, because we were away this weekend, and she had a banana cake, which made me think, oh, of this.
Oh, how what is it? Synchronistical or...
Synchronized? No. Serendipitous.
Oh,
good on you. That. Yes.
Thank you, Sev.
So good. Yeah. Yes, very serendipitous. Serendipitous?
Yeah.
Yes, great. Yeah. Beautiful. It just crumbled. And I was thinking, yeah, no, because I was trying to work out how I would sort of differentiate the two. Okay. And that slice. And it was the crumb. I'm like, yeah, yes, this is it. It's the shape. It's the crumb. Mm-hmm. It's also, I think, the... Let me take a step back. Does Sonia's have icing on it?
No.
No icing.
No
See,
icing.
Nick's mum put icing on it.
No, but that's because in our household we don't like icing.
Oh.
Right? Yeah. So not everyone does, right?
This is news to me.
Well, sometimes people just want the basic cake. Do you know what
it's
I mean?
True.
So
it had like a lemon drizzle.
Oh no! So it. I know that there's some family members that just don't want icing on their cake, and they're just like not about that. And so then you can't put off, you can't take off icing.
No, once it's there, it's there.
Exactly. So.
Mm. And you touched on walnuts.
Yes.
There were walnuts in this cake. Was it the nuts in the cake or the bread that you don't like?
I just don't think, why are walnuts there? Why can't banana be the star of the show? And why do we need sub characters being so extra?
It's true. Yeah. I like the texture that walnut brings. Otherwise you've got
cake or in the bread.
Oh,
walnuts in either?
Not fast. I like crunch.
Right.
So crunch makes things a bit more interesting for me. All right, it's time for your final course, which, as always, comes with two helpings.
Okay.
For your first serve, let's talk about music. You're in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. What are you listening to?
Well, I like to have music playing all the time,
mm-hmm,
in my apartment. If people are coming over, I'm going to listen to something to get into the mood for them.
Mm.
Right? And it'll usually be something jazzy, instrumentally, something very background,
mm-hmm,
or like a lo-fi beat.
Mm.
And that way I'm also like, because I believe that love gets put in anything you're cooking, baking. Mm-hmm. And so the music is important to set the intention. In that way, I'm intentional with the music and the feelings I want to have that get evoked from the music, and then that goes into the food.
Yep.
So it's very situational. So jazz instrumental is usually what earths me and grounds me. Mm-hmm. If I'm just cooking and listening to music, Mac Miller, like literally, like I'm just so obsessed. I'm every year on my Spotify Wrapped, I'm like 0.05.
Oh, you're at the top. Yes.
I'm like ridiculously in the top. It's like the minutes are just, and I don't do it intentionally. And it's so funny because when I stopped driving, obviously I don't drive, like, so the Spotify numbers went down last year just by proxy of not listening to it as much.
Mm-hmm.
Mac Miller was like still minutes ahead, and I was just like, what am I doing? Like, I would confidently say that there's not a day where I don't listen to a Mac Miller song.
All right, your second serve.
Okay.
It comes in the form of Whiskey Business.
Yep.
The game that's bursting at the seams with tough choices and difficult questions.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're in the middle of a heat wave here in Melbourne. And an icy cold treat is the best way to cool down. Are you having a gelato or a sorbet?
Gelato.
Flavor?
Zabaglione.
Oh.
Mm. It's my favorite ice cream. Mm. Again, another thing I take very seriously.
Yes. There was no hesitation there at all.
No.
Tell me about that flavor.
Yeah. So have you made a zabaglione before?
I have.
Yeah. So zabaglione is basically eggs and sugar with a little bit of masala, scrambled, but like a egg yolk specifically. Mm. There's no egg white in it.
Nice and rich.
Yeah. And the way that it was what I grew up on as a kid for breakfast on a Sunday morning.
Perfect.
Before mass, right?
Yep.
So I spent a lot of time with my nonni, my grandparents, and that would be what I would want in the morning over pancakes, right? Like, so either pancakes or the zabaglione, but zabaglione is like the best thing because I'm very much a coffee girl.
Mm-hmm.
So she would make me the zabaglione, and then we would like fuse that with coffee and a bit of masala, and like that's a very Italian breakfast.
Mm.
That in gelato is just like, have you ever had zabaglione gelato?
Not in gelato, no. I need to.
It's so good.
Might do it on the way home.
Yeah. It's hard to find though. There's,
maybe that's why I've not had it, because I have never seen it. In season one, you made roast potato and gnocchi.
Yes.
Not in the same episode, but in the same season.
Yes.
Both dishes that celebrate the humble potato. Yeah. We touched on the potato before.
Yeah.
But if you had to choose the superior way to enjoy a potato, would you choose roast potato or gnocchi?
Easy, roast potato.
Mm.
It's my favorite way. So potato is a love of mine. Mm-hmm. I have a favorite potato, like a type of variety of potato. It's a King Edward.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bomb diggity. Do you like King Edwards?
Do you know what? I have a terrible confession.
Okay.
That I'm not a potato aficionado, so I don't know the difference.
That's okay, because I've had a Georgie from Georgie's Harvest in my life, okay? She is a potato specialist.
Yes.
She says that she is probably the only, and I believe she would be the only potato specialist in Australia. I don't know worldwide, but certainly in Australia. When you go into her stall, she's at the South Melbourne Market, guys. Check her out. She's amazing. I'm there frequently. But she is into potatoes. She has all sorts of varieties. She's all about local produce. She now does vegetables as well, but initially it was very much focused on the potatoes. And so in being around her, she educated me for so many years, and it was just by exposure of the love that she has for really good quality produce. She doesn't have it because it's not good enough for the shop, and that is, I think, a good tell for like where I want to be spending my time. And that's the reason why I have a favorite potato. So
I love it. And I watched the roast potato episode, and I loved the tip that she gave around, because there's a debate. Do you use preheated water? Do you use boiling water to put the potatoes in?
Yeah.
Or do you cook it from cold? And correct me if I'm wrong, but her distinction was that for stuff that's grown underground, you cook it from cold water.
Yes.
But if it's grown above ground, like a broccoli, you start with hot water.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I didn't know that.
She had so many nuggets of gold, and we're really limited to the amount of minutes that we can do an episode. And that was one of the ones where I really felt like, I was like, the knowledge is being butchered, guys. Because it was just, she just speaks so frankly. And she's like, yep, that's the fact.
Mm.
But it's so educational. Mm. And she really comes from a place of love, and She's actually just been such a support to me as well over the years, and especially in delving into my show and just being a really like unofficial sponsor in a way. Like she really has had my back in that way. And I think that's what I was saying about community, you know what I mean? If you have people that you connect with and you are part of a community, you have people to call on, you know? And I certainly would be there for anyone that I love, so.
Yeah. And the final question.
Okay.
Just a small one.
Uh-oh.
You're planning your perfect high tea.
Yeah.
Three dishes and three guests.
Yeah.
What are you serving and who's coming? Dead, alive, or fictional?
Mac Miller.
Mm-hmm. I thought he would be on the list.
Mira, who is my, or was my favorite person in the whole world. She was my singer, singing teacher.
Yes.
My singer. She was my...
I have a singer. She's just over there. just follows me around and sings.
So I would love to just... I'm going to be real honest. I would love to look into her eyes one more time. Hmm. I really miss her eyes. They say that the first thing that fades with memory when someone passes away, it's their voice. Mm. But I think because we were singing with each other, that's the strongest sense for me.
Mm.
So it's her eyes that I miss the most because they made every problem I was going through when I was a little kid melt away. And that 1 hour, although I was known for falling asleep in singing class, which, by the way, just I want to emphasize that they were private singing classes. So I was falling asleep in front of everyone.
In a class of one.
My mother and Mira. That's it. So, oh dear. Look, I will say this. I'm torn between one of two options.
Mm-hmm.
One being I want to hustle to be someone that helps me further my like career and be able to like go out and do all the adventurous things. But then I'd also would want to invite someone that would want to be in the room and that like I want Mac Miller because of me, right? So I would want someone to be in the room because they would want me to be in their room.
Yeah.
I think that would be cool to like. So I don't know the name of that person because I don't know who that like, but whoever that is, I would love to make space for someone that would just feel really excited to spend time in each other's company, and what an honor that would, you know, be to like do that for someone.
Yeah. What a great answer.
Thanks.
What are you serving?
Oh yeah, food. Well, I don't play by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would want to serve something that is I would love to serve everything really, really, really miniature. Okay. I want everything to be tiny. I want my paws to look big. That's how tiny I want. So cute. Yeah. So, so cute. Right.
Very petite.
Yeah. But then I would love everything to be, you know, like jaffles and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, but tiny miniature jaffle. Like I want a tiny miniature jaffle maker. Mm. Right. So I want a bit.
Yes. Do you see those Instagram videos where
this is like, where this comes from?
The mini cooking.
Yes.
Where it's like the
so this is what I would want to do.
A thimble.
Yes. Yeah. So little like maybe little jaffles because I like the way that the imprint is.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. The triangle with the cross on it.
A deviled egg. Is also, I really like the idea of a deviled egg.
I've come around to deviled eggs recently. Yes. Hated them as a kid.
Really? Okay.
It's the thing about boiled egg. I think it was the smell put me off.
Right.
But yeah, I'm here for a deviled egg now.
Yeah, I like a deviled egg. My favorite dish on my Spanish side is ensaladilla, which is basically like a massive potato salad, but it feels like what would be a deviled egg as well, just with added potato because it's basically tons of mayonnaise.
Oh.
Egg.
Give me mayonnaise every day.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just like, so it's what I like, why I like deviled eggs. Because it's just, I don't know, there's this deliciousness. It like feels like a miniature ensaladilla, even though it's not because there's no potato.
Yeah.
And then I think I'd want to do something a little bit sweet. So maybe a scone or something. But
a classic. Miniature scone.
Yeah.
Jam like, and cream or cream then jam?
Ooh.
What's the order?
Okay. So again, I feel I'm a little weird. So sometimes, you know, you just cut it in half. Okay.
Yeah.
And this solves the problem, cutting in half. Because on one side you do cream and then jam. And then on the other side you do jam and then cream.
The best of both worlds.
Yes. That's how I solve that problem. Oh. I don't want to be decisive on it.
I want to do them both ways.
Exactly. And so if you ever see me eat a scone in public, you will witness this occur. Yeah.
Well, have it all.
Exactly. Sometimes it's about the way you look at something. And your perspective can see you be able to achieve greatness or really see roadblocks.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a much more inspiring thing to end on than what popped into my head when you said, why not do both? Do you Do you remember the El Paso ad with the little girl?
Yeah.
And they have the hard tacos and the soft tacos.
Yeah.
And then their family's fighting about it. And then she says, why don't we have both?
Yeah. I love that. That's so good.
That is what sucked me. But let's finish with yours. Yeah. I think that's a much better way.
So, it's in my head now. There's a little bit you can dance.
Yeah. Why not have both? And what a way to bring this episode of Bakeology to a close, Vanessa. Thank you so much for sharing and being just so generous with your time and your stories. I've loved every second.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate hearing a little bit more about you, and thank you for holding space for hearing my story as well. I appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Shall we have another slice?
Yes.
Yes, let's get to it. Now, I told you this was going to be a pretty special episode, and I hope you got as much joy and inspiration out of it as I did. Now, you can find Vanessa on Instagram and Facebook at Vanessa Calafiore. And be sure to also check out Vanessa's Here We Go web series on YouTube. As you know, the first season is out now and is all about food, and the new second season is starting late June 2024. We've gone choc chip cookie mad with this week's recipes. Keep an eye out on the socials to see Vanessa and I make a batch of the baking queen and friend of Bakeology Amelia Jackson's famous chocolate chip cookies. But one recipe is never enough. So I've dug into the archives and found the choc chip cookie recipe my mum used to bake from the Women's Weekly Biscuit Cookbook. These are a classic little cookie that I've taken some delicious creative license with, so be sure to check that recipe out on my Instagram and website, whatsadambaking and whatsadambaking.com. And don't forget, if you enjoyed Bakeology, please leave a rating and a review. It really helps independent podcasts like mine get noticed, and it really means a lot to me too. And if you can believe it, next week is the finale of this season of Bakeology, so be sure to listen in for a big finish with comedian Soren Jayamana. And until then, stay sweet and watch out for those soggy bottoms. Like, that we were eating, we were spooning jam out of a jar at one point. It was so good.
Yes. Mm. Adam, you know what you need to do? You need to record a whole bunch of mmms from everyone and do one of three series. One being guess whose mmm that is, you know? And then also just
like
a collective.
Like the mystery sound on the radio.
And then also in the background.
That could be like the preview.
Yes.
Just to get people really hooked.
Yeah, exactly. Make it my episode.
I'm going to have so much content for the blooper at the end. I love it.